I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. A few years ago, the folks at Harbor Publishing put together an indispensable book, The Encyclopedia of British Columbia. A very fine companion is the new The Encyclopedia of Rain Coast Place Names, a complete reference to coastal British Columbia, now out from Harbor. It's a very fine book, bringing together stories and details about the province's history, people, and culture. 100 years ago, Captain John T. Walburn's British Columbia Coast Names was published, and this is an apt inheritor of that tradition. Andrew Scott joins me now. He has had the task of putting this book together, and as a result, he's done a great service and given all of us a wonderful resource. Andrew Scott is a veteran journalist who's appeared in sundry publications. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Andrew Scott. Good morning, Mr. Scott.
Good morning.
Where are you this morning?
I'm at my home in Seashelt, sitting in my office.
Now, this may seem like an odd question. When you travel the province, and I'm assuming you traveled the province a great deal in the course of the time that you've been writing this book, do you get lost at all?
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I like maps and charts. I'm pretty familiar with them. So I have been lost in my kayak a couple of times, but only in a minor kind of way. I did most of my research really before I wrote this book, because I've always loved the B.C. coast and exploring the B.C. coast, and I've written about the B.C. coast quite a bit over the course of a fairly long writing and editing career. And I've gathered a lot of information. I'm an organized sort of filer away of facts and anything I can get on the B.C. coast. So I had a pretty good basis for doing this research, but it did require 3 years of additional, more technical research on the names themselves.
I read in your bio that you have a great keen interest in a specialization in B.C. postal history.
Yes, that's been a hobby of mine for many years. It's sort of related, I suppose, to my interest in the coast in the sense that there are post offices at all sorts of little out-of-the-way places on the B.C. coast over the years, many of which didn't last very long. And for collectors, many of them are rare and hard to find and thus valuable, though there aren't that many collectors. I became interested in where these places might be and if anything was left there, and I did a lot of exploring. I guess that interest became more general as I traveled down the ends of all kinds of little back roads and over my earlier life, just exploring out there. And then I started finding that many of these places were very interesting. I started writing about them, produced a few books on sort of out-of-the-way places on the B.C. coast. So really it wasn't a huge extension for me to become involved in this project. I wasn't specifically interested in the history and origin of the names before. That was just part of my general interest, but that is a specialty, just the actual history of the names, or the toponymy, as it's more kind of pedantically known. So I was able to make that jump from general history to this the history of the names without that much difficulty.
So how do we use this book?
Well, you could really just open it anywhere and start reading.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of book you probably would start from A and read to Z, but
no.
I wouldn't dissuade anyone from attempting to do that. It's a book you can surf. I mean, it's a book. It's a reference book first, and so if people are looking for specific information, then they would look at what they were interested in. But for a general reader, and if this book is also aimed at mariners, because people who get to know the coast inevitably become interested in the history of the names on their charts and maps. So, but for a general interested reader, I think you could just open it anywhere or just pick something that you're interested in, and then because I've used the system of cross-referencing, then each entry should lead you to another related entry or to an entry on a slightly different topic, and you could just go from entry to entry. You could kind of surf the book like you would the internet, and you would eventually get to, it could cover the whole book that way.
That's what I did, because I don't travel very much, so but I'm very interested in history and the sort, so I quite enjoyed reading the book that way, by opening it up in different places or looking up things. This book by Captain Walburn, from 100 years ago, I've never seen it except in bibliographies and the sort, and in other books. It's considered a landmark. Is it still in print?
It is. It came out in 1909 in a hardcover form. It was actually published by the Government of Canada. Walram was a federal employee, and even though this was not his job to produce this book, it was his hobby. He had good contacts in the federal government, and they end up publishing his book. I don't know how many hardcover copies were originally printed. They're still around. They're kind of collector's items, though they're not that valuable. Then I think in about 1970 it was reprinted. I believe by Douglas and McIntyre, I'd have to check, sort of for the Vancouver Public Library. They got all the proceeds from it. So it was reprinted in facsimile, which means it was the exact layout of the pages was reproduced, even with a couple of Walbrand's little sort of side notes in the margins. I guess they photographed his original copy. And that's been in print ever since from 1970 on. I don't know how many copies would have sold over the years, but a substantial number, enough to make it probably one of the best-selling BC books of all time, strangely enough. But there you go. It has a following. People like Walbrand. He had a very anecdotal style. He went off on huge digressions, especially about Royal Navy history and European naval history, which he was particularly interested in, but wasn't all that germane to the BC coast. So a lot of his information, of course, is completely out of date, because it was published 100 years ago, though it was pretty accurate for its time. He made a few mistakes, but I think everyone has made a few mistakes in this neck of the woods, because not everything is known. So
now, your book is substantially bigger. Is it because BC has, has it changed a great deal, or is it because we have the technology now to go places that perhaps Captain Walbrand wasn't ever able to see or go to?
Well, certainly thousands of names have been added since Walbrand's time. There was, even though most of the coast had been pretty well charted by the early 1900s, there were still little bits and pieces that still hadn't been done, some of the remote estuaries. And I think it wasn't until the 1950s that the government considered that the charting and mapping of the province to be complete. But as new technology comes along, then maps have to be updated and upgraded. So aerial photography was a huge development in the 1930s. That sort of coincided with a period where industry was really expanding in British Columbia, especially along the coast. Transportation routes were using larger vessels. They needed more detailed charts. Harbors had to be surveyed and resurveyed. Then we had sonar came along, which allowed advances in mapping underwater features like reefs and banks and whatnot, and then now we have GPS, which gives a much finer resolution. So with each technological advance, the surveyors go out and redo everything, or redo a lot of it. Someone has said that the work of a marine surveyor is never finished, and it probably isn't. So
As someone who's traveled the waterways and the sort, it'd probably be fun to have sort of like, we have this Google Street Views now, right?
Mm-hmm.
To have like the coast that way.
I guess so. There'd be an awful lot of trees and rocks, though.
Yeah. But for someone like me who's never gone, I think that'd be a great way to look at it, I guess, the first time. Or maybe I should just go myself one day.
Maybe they can do an edited version for you.
Yeah. I was thinking about the Challenger map while I was reading your book. And I'm just wondering, has the land itself changed a great deal?
There have been changes. There are natural changes in the form of river estuaries, which are changing. The mouth of the Fraser River has changed totally in the last 100 years. So there's issues of accretion, where new land is formed, and you know, the question arises: who owns that land, and what can be done with that land? And there's erosion issues where land is lost. And then there's all kinds of man-made features have been added to the landscape. Starting, you know, back in the 1850s, when the Royal Navy turned Esquimalt Harbor into a naval base, they blasted away here and there. They removed they turned a peninsula into an island, and built a big dry dock that obliterated a cove, and points rocks have become joined to the land as a result of human and natural activity, and thus have had to have their names changed to points. So the landscape is in a constant fluctuation, though very slowly and very gradually. It's like a geological process rather than anything else, though human beings certainly have the ability to speed that process up.
Well, what's a recent name, something that's just been named, in the last number of years?
The naming of features has really slowed down quite a bit over the last few years. It sort of peaked, I guess, around the 1940s and 50s, and I'm just thinking of one here. Now, how about speaking of a man-made feature, we could point to Elfgy Point, which is right at the tip right beyond the Vancouver Museum at the kind of tip of the park there, next to Kitsilano Beach. It's named after Elfgy Armstrong, who is a chair of the board of trustees of the Vancouver Museums and Planetarium Association, played all sorts of important local civic roles, and so that name was adopted in 1984. It's actually an artificial breakwater. Or I could take another example. A lot of names have been added as a result of the casualties of war. Is one of the kind of categories of names that the government will accept for new names is men and women who died in action or in service during World War or either of the World Wars, and about 1,000 people have been named from that sort of general category up until right the last few years. Let's see, one of the most recent ones was William Francis Millard, who was a flight sergeant in the RAF in World War II, and he was shot down and died in 1942. And the Millard family is actually a well-known name on the BC coast because the family used to operate salmon canneries, and they operated one at Redonda Bay, and so a point and that area was named after William Millard in 2006. I'm just checking my notes here.
So it is the Government of Canada that does this?
No, not anymore. It's the Government of BC. It used to be the Government of Canada. The responsibility for official names, we're talking about official names here, an official name is a name that has been approved by the appropriate regulatory authorities, and I say that because those have changed over the years, and I'll just refer to that in a sec. An official name is a name that is listed in the Gazetteer of Canada, and thus has to appear on charts and maps. And this was originally looked after by the Geographical Board of Canada, and that board changed its name several times over the years. And I think in the early 1960s, the responsibility for names was transferred to the province, and Geographical Names Board became an advisory board with representation from all the provinces. And now the responsibility for place names in BC is looked after by the Geographical Names Office, which moves around also. Last I knew it was part of the mapping department and the Integrated Land Management Bureau. I might not have that correct. I have to double check on that.
Yeah.
The terminology of the bureaucracies is always changing. So anyway, it's part of it was probably part of the Ministry of Lands or whatever the Ministry of Lands is called these days.
Now, has there been moves to change names, say, if they're politically incorrect over the years?
Yes, they have. Quite recently, for instance, the name Squaw was eliminated from place names in BC in 2000, the year 2000. And there's names that are considered derogatory to various ethnic groups have come under the gun over the last few years. You see, four instances of Chinaman were rescinded in 1996 on the recommendation of the Vancouver Association of Chinese Canadians, there are still several features with Jap in the name. And with Negro in the name, though, then there were a number of place names that used the word nigger, and those were abandoned quite a while ago, about 1966. There's three features with the name Negro, and then there's. I mean, some people consider Siwash to be a discriminatory name. Siwash is sort of an interesting name because, obviously, it's the name of a very famous Vancouver feature, Siwash Rock, in Stanley Park. But Siwash comes from the Chinook, a made-up jargon language that was used in the 19th century by traders and early immigrants to communicate, and by the First Nations groups themselves, so that they could communicate with this sort of simple language between tribes. And that Siwash was just the word for a First Nation individual. And eventually, I mean, it originally just meant a local person. It didn't have a derogatory meaning, but over the years it became sort of a racist or derogatory name or a sign of contempt, and there are a lot of names with Siwash in them in BC which still exist, and no attempt has been made to change any of those, though I think today you'd have to consider those names to be politically incorrect as well.
Now, you dedicate the book to Jack David Scott and Pamela Mildred Scott. I'm assuming they're your parents?
They are my parents, and they both died while I was writing this book. My mom was 88, my dad was 91, and so I dedicated the book to them. Because the book, in a way, is a dedication to all of those people who came before us to the province of BC and made their lives here. Most of us have come from somewhere else. And so they're pioneers in one sense or another. And this book really is all about those those who have come before and given their names to the features on our landscape.
If you had to do a survey of the names in the book, have you found that there's a mix of both Aboriginal and European sort of names? Is there a breakdown perhaps on percentages as to?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have any idea what that was. I mean, there would be, but it would be very disproportionately geared to non-Aboriginal names. I mean, there are hundreds of Aboriginal names in the book, but this is, you know, a whole big area to talk about, because most of the Aboriginal names in the book are not correct or wouldn't be considered correct by First Nations groups. Those names were applied by Europeans and who didn't know very much about First Nation culture or history, and they were basically best attempts to approximate what they were hearing from First Nation informants as far as the names of places was concerned. And there were sort of ludicrous examples like Nootka, which is a famous example of where Captain Cook apparently thought that he was being told the name of the place when actually he was being told to go around and find a better anchorage. And so one of our most important historical names is kind of based on this ludicrous kind of mistake or misinterpretation. Now, as each First Nation treaty is ratified, it will have, or most of them will have, a section on place names. The Nisga Treaty, for instance, caused 34 new place names to be entered into the official gazetteer and thus must appear on future maps and charts. And a number of them are coastal names, and I deal with those in quite a bit of detail because I think this is a really important development. And not very many new names are being added to the BC coast, but the changes that we're likely to see in the future, I believe that most of them will be the correcting or replacing of incorrect or inaccurate First Nations names by First Nations people, and starting to do a lot of research into the origin of traditional First Nations names, and I think a lot of that research will eventually find its way into the gazetteer.
Do you enjoy doing this?
Oh, absolutely.
It seems like you did, yeah.
Yeah, I had great fun. I could hardly wait to get at it every morning, and which is not usually my standard approach to 8:30 in the morning, but I really got into this project and kind of left quite a gap when I was done. I was sort of like reaching for the letter after Z, and there wasn't one, you know.
Yeah.
Because I did it alphabetically, and it really gets you into so many different aspects that people think, well, you know, for names it's kind of a narrow focus, and it is in a way, but it does get you into all kinds of issues, and obviously history, but also biography. The biographies of our early pioneers were quite remarkable, and they're extraordinary people. In fact, many of them were quite ordinary people, but they came here and lived through extraordinary times, and that brought out extraordinary qualities in them. And then you get into all the politics of the era, and then the natural history, the geology and geography. The history of the vessels and ships on the BC coast is very interesting. And of course, the whole history of surveying itself, because it was the surveyors who did most of the work when it came to naming. And there's a lot of different areas that place names get into. They get into quite a few little known aspects of our history, and I've tried to go into more detail in aspects of history that are reflected that people don't really know about. I mean, everyone has heard of Captain Vancouver and Captain Cook and James Douglas, and you can read about those guys in a lot of different good books. And of course, I've dealt with them all here and given them their due. But I've tried to emphasize unknown aspects of our history, like the armed confrontations between the Royal Navy and First Nations people on the coast in the 1850s, 60s, and 70s, where there were all kinds of incidents where naval vessels were sent out and bombed and burnt First Nation villages on the BC coast. I mean, this kind of history has been written about to a certain extent, but it's certainly not that well known. And also the men who financed and organized the early fur trading voyages. I mean, we know quite a bit about the fur trading voyages themselves, but the how they were organized and sent out from Asia in the end of the 18th century is very interesting, and the sort of the economics involved in trade at that time is well worth reading about and hasn't really been written about widely. So I've really tried to emphasize those kind of little known aspects and by doing extra research in those areas, and hopefully they'll fill in a few gaps.
Andrew, it's been a fascinating conversation and just a tremendous book. Congratulations on it. I know that a lot of people will be using this for a number of years from now.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. The book is called The Encyclopedia of Rain Coast Place Names, a complete reference to coastal British Columbia. It's from Harbor Publishing. Its author, Andrew Scott, on the line. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plana.